US.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wiscommon Sense from the shores of Lake Wissota, where it's a beautiful day up north on this Wednesday, July 19th. It's 57 degrees up here in Chippewa Falls, 57 in Waukesha as well. Folks listening on locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids, it's 55, Hayward 58, Platteville 59. Some rain up in the Hayward area as a line of showers and even some thunderstorms rolls through kind of almost along Highway 53 there, maybe just east of there, and some more showers moving into the northwest corner of Wisconsin. Your full weatherology forecast is coming up in just a bit. Another busy show today. We'll be talking about Senator Ron Johnson and the $400,000 flip-flop. It's only cost his campaign donors $400,000. Then again, maybe those donors already knew what they were getting into. We will explain. Then at 6:30, we have our weekly climate check with Melissa Baldoff, and we will be talking about new rules on electric cars and trucks. And it appears that while we still don't know the final word on these rules, America's automakers have made it clear they're ready to embrace electric vehicles because the American public is ready to do the same. So we'll talk about that and what it could mean for Wisconsin's future economy. As we talk about Wisconsin's future, we will ask ourselves at the top of the next hour, are we moving in a direction more like Iowa or more like Michigan? And the reason I picked those two states is that the legislatures in those two states have gone in very different directions this year. And Courier Newsroom, which runs Up North News, also has outlets in Michigan and Iowa. So we'll talk to a political correspondent from each of those states and find out what is happening there and what it might mean for us here. And then at 7:30, we'll be talking to a Wisconsin superintendent, as well as a representative from the Wisconsin Public Education Network. Because you see, despite the big compromise deal between Governor Evers and legislative Republicans, some school districts are still going to get less state aid next year. We're going to find out why that is and what that means to those districts as they go forward. So I think Todd Alba, we have Melissa Kay from Locally Grown Radio joining us for our daily history lesson and music break. And along the way, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can email us radio at upnorthnewswi.com. And one more note, if you haven't done it yet, you still have just under 2 weeks to give blood. You can always give blood, but if you do it within the next 2 weeks, you can be part of the Civic Media Civic Pints Challenge. All you got to do is take a selfie while you're giving blood, and that'll enter you in a contest that can get you brewer's tickets or some other prizes as well. Plus, it's just a good thing to do, so keep Civic Pints in mind and go give blood sometime before the end of this month. Aaron Zommers is down at the new State Street Studios in Madison, right near the state capitol. Aaron, good morning. How are things on day two of the new digs?
Good morning. Going well. Everything seems to work. It's nice to come in and just know that things function correctly and nobody goofed anything up overnight. Not that that happened a lot at the last place, but if it did, there are a few things that I had to check every day just to make sure.
It's still got that, you know, that new studio smell, if you will. But I have to ask, and I know this is useless for folks listening on the radio, but we, of course, have a video feed, and you can watch us through the video feed on Facebook and other channels. Why is the camera set so that you're way off on the right edge of the screen? Are they expecting that you'll always have somebody stalking behind you that you have to watch out for, or how does that work? Or is it just that there are no TV people working at a radio station?
I think it might be some combination, and also because there are monitors on either side of the desk, and I have kind of scooted myself right over in front of the ones on the left here so mm-hmm. I can see it better. So maybe it's just because I'm blind.
You know, it's just what I'm saying is it's a great new studio. It's shiny and well done, but clearly it still does not look like the bridge of the Enterprise, I guess, not is yet. What I'm getting at there. you know, we need to work on the framing. Definitely, much like the other place, we need a little something up on the walls, you know, just to make it feel a little bit more like home. So we'll work on it. It's something that, you know, people, it'll come to us. You'll watch it. Think of Aaron as a blank canvas right now. I mean, except for his shirt. He always has a different shirt every day. Thankfully, he goes to the laundry. But the rest of it is a blank canvas that we can play with. And so, Aaron, I hope you're excited at the Pandora's box that I've just opened up.
Send in your comments on Facebook, and we might share what you want to do with the studio space, or me, apparently.
Or you, sure, why not? Yes, we are on several different Facebook pages, the Up North News YouTube page, and again, if we see your comments, we might put them up on screen, and we might also act on them, depending on how good they are. From a personal standpoint, I'm a little excited. Today is my last normal day for a while, because starting tomorrow, between friends and family, there are some summer traditions that get underway for the Kreitlow household. I have two adult daughters, and each daughter has two kids. So I've got four grandkids. And Sherry and I have been very blessed that since the nest emptied 10 years ago, 11 years ago now, we've always been able to get our daughters and then their spouses and then their kids or families to get them under our roof for about a week every summer. And that always happens at the end of July. So I will take this Friday off and I will take next Friday off. But next week, Monday to Thursday, I'm going to have a house full here, and it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a little bit of chaos, but it's something I'm very jazzed up about. And so if I have an extra little lilt in my step, it's because our fun little family get together tradition will continue starting tomorrow. Let's take a break. We've got news headlines and much more coming up next. You're up north. Back now on Up North News Radio, and a reminder that you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Go to upnorthnewswi.com, click newsletter in the banner on top of the homepage. In the newsletter today, Christina Laurie was telling us about this yesterday as part of the uplift, about a man who uses a 3D printer to make little tiny Wisconsin state capitals and then puts them in little libraries around town so that kids are encouraged to go read a book and then maybe find a nice little treat, a little bit of civic pride in Wisconsin. So be on the lookout for our newsletter there. Let's see, in the headlines, there was a shift in the suburbs of Milwaukee, a little bit more toward Democrats. Again, not enough to flip a legislative seat in the State Assembly District 24. Paul Melotic was the winner over Democrat Bob Tatterson by roughly a 54-46 margin. And that was because Dan Knodel, who had been the assembly rep there, moved on to the state Senate seat in the Milwaukee suburbs. And that's because Alberta Darling abruptly retired last December. But again, according to commenters there, the Republican, Trump in that district, Assembly District 24, the north suburbs of Milwaukee, Trump won that district by 24 points in 2016. He won it by 17 points in 2020. And the Republican candidate yesterday won it by just 7 points. That, again, according to a political science professor from UW La Crosse who was posting about the race. But again, that special election is done. You also, if you go to upnorthnewswi.com, our top story there is a summary of what was an extremely busy news day for consequences that continue to come from attempts to overturn the 2020 election. And I looked yesterday to do the math. We're nearly 1,000 days away from the 2020 election. It's been 988 days since the 2020 election. It's taking a long time to hold accountable the people who cheated and who tried to rig an election. It's tough because they continue to be unrepentant and boisterous, making up the claim that they saw, you know, Democrats as being the ones who were cheating and who had irregularities, even though there's never been any evidence of it, but plenty of evidence about how Donald Trump set in motion a plan to try to overturn the election, to cheat the voters. Well, yesterday, Trump did confirm that he had received a letter from Special Counsel Jack Smith informing the former president that he is the target of an investigation. We also learned yesterday from Wisconsin's top elections official, Megan Wolf, the administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, that she has had an interview. She had an interview in April with FBI and U.S. Department of Justice officials as part of the special counsel's investigation. We know that top elections officials in Madison and Milwaukee have been interviewed as part of the investigation. But then the really big news yesterday came when the attorney general in the state of Michigan filed multiple felony charges against Michigan's fake electors. There were 16 of them, and they now face crimes, face criminal charges, rather, for the crime of forgery and political forgery for being part of Trump's fake elector scheme. And we know it was a scheme. It came out in the January 6th committee hearings. It was in those committee hearings last summer that we learned more of the details of how Trump then used Rudy Giuliani to help recruit and set up these slates of fake electors, including here in Wisconsin. They were given access to the capitals in places like Michigan and Wisconsin. In Wisconsin, with the help of Scott Fitzgerald, who was then a state senator, is now a congressman. It was Fitzgerald and Congressman Tom Tiffany who both cast votes to overturn the will of voters in two states on January 6th as part of Trump's efforts to throw the election into chaos. These Michigan residents, much like the Wisconsin ones, signed documents that said, "We are the duly elected and qualified electors for president and vice president of the United States of America for the state of Wisconsin and for the state of Michigan." And it's those ballots, those fraudulent ballots that were in Ron Johnson's office on January 6th. He says somebody, we're not quite sure who, brought them there and that a request was made to Ron Johnson to hand these fraudulent ballots to Vice President Mike Pence on the floor of the House during a joint session on January 6th to count the ballots. As we learned from the January 6th commission, had Pence gone along with this, he would have taken those fraudulent ballot sheets from Ron Johnson that were filled out in Wisconsin and Michigan. And Pence would have said that there is doubt about the validity of the Biden slates of electors and that there might be a need to either count the Trump ballots instead or at least throw the election back to the state legislatures in Michigan and Wisconsin, which at the time were controlled by Republicans, and could have led to legislatures voting to overturn the will of the voters in Michigan and in Wisconsin. But thankfully, Vice President Mike Pence declined to go along. And a staffer for Mike Pence told a staffer for Ron Johnson, "Do not let Johnson bring those ballots to the vice president under no circumstances." They wanted no part of it. And for Johnson, he says that's it. That was the extent of his involvement. He doesn't know anything else about it. The same Ron Johnson who spent the weeks prior to January 6th quite loudly sowing doubt about the validity of the election results. The same Ron Johnson who told Republican legislators in Wisconsin that they should basically ignore the Wisconsin Elections Commission and take over the administration of federal elections in Wisconsin on their own. And so we're to believe that Ron Johnson's involvement in this is limited to a couple of phone calls and a handoff that never quite happened. But for Ron Johnson, there's been ample reason to have doubts, shall we say, about what he's doing and what he says he's going to do, not just when it comes to things like, you know, the validity of our elections, but even about money. Because the story came down in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel yesterday that Ron Johnson had lent personal funds to his campaign and said he had no expectation to be paid back. And yet the latest documents that he's filed indicate that he has received at least $400,000 reimbursed for his loans, the ones that he said he was not expecting to be paid back for. And yet it appears that that's exactly what's happening. Why is this important? I mean, after all, candidates all the time loan their campaigns money. That's not new. Sometimes they get those loans get paid back. Sometimes they don't. So why is this one important? Well, as I wrote in an editorial that's going to be posted today, America's founders and generations of leaders know one thing. Democracy is more fragile than any of us want to believe. And the move toward aristocracy can happen rather easily once the super wealthy can use their money to obtain power. It's why in American history, we have seen repeated cycles. First, attempts to limit how much a single person or a corporation or a group can give to politicians, followed by attempts to get around or strike down those limits. And Ron Johnson has put on a master class in how that happens. After all, it goes back to the very beginning when Ron Johnson was first elected to the Senate in 2010. That first election of his is forever stained by the way his company just happened to give him a $10 million payment shortly after he spent $9 million of his own money running to unseat Russ Feingold. Now, Johnson has always maintained he did nothing wrong. He's never faced any charges or consequences for it. He said that that quote-unquote deferred compensation was an agreed-upon level of payment after not taking a salary at the company he owned for the 13 years prior. It just happens to be a coincidence that the dollar amounts are about the same. It's not at all a case, Johnson says, of a corporation helping fund an election. This is the same Ron Johnson who held his own party hostage in 2017 with a tax bill that he would not allow to pass until it included a sweetheart deal of massive proportions for a special type of corporation, the type of corporation he happened to own at the time. Other friendly billionaires also owned similar corporations, and they helped pay for an endless barrage of sleazy ads that helped drag Ron Johnson across the finish line last November. Look, it's difficult to prove outright corruption about anything in politics. Look at Trump. Look how long he has eluded consequences for his actions in 2020. But this current political finance system, it can't help but give the appearance that a politician could make private promises to wealthy donors whose dollars can later end up in the candidate's checkbook. And of course, it would not be surprising if those high dollar donors expect favorable treatment in ways that a senator's less wealthy constituents could never enjoy. So how do we avoid any suspicions of impropriety? Well, Congress could put a limit on how much a candidate can be reimbursed post-election for personal funds that they loaned to the campaign before the election. Let's say $250,000. Because otherwise, is it really fair if one candidate has millions of dollars to loan to the race out of his or her own pocket, knowing that they can be paid back by donors once the race is over, while another candidate, maybe from, you know, a middle-class household, has no similar pile of cash that would make the race competitive? Why wouldn't we have that $250,000 limit? Oh, wait, we did. Until the conservatives on the U.S. Supreme Court last year threw it out in a challenge brought by Johnson's colleague, Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz. The result of that Supreme Court decision makes it even easier for millionaires to give off the appearance of having bought their way into office. Some future generation of leaders hopefully will clean up politics, provided that democracy's fragility isn't tested to the extreme. And don't be surprised when elections are finally cleaned up again in this country, if the folks doing the mopping up don't bring up Ron Johnson, Ted Cruz, and the current conservative justices as exhibits 1 through 8 in their motivation to clean up the mess. But for now, the only way around that is to continue to inform people about what the system is like, motivate them to vote. As difficult to impossible as it is to overcome gerrymandered maps, it then becomes a matter of independents, and in this case, Republicans, seeing this and saying, this is enough. This is not a group of people I want to vote for or be associated with. And then the mopping up can begin. Coming up next, Melissa Baldoff has our weekly climate check as we talk about the future of automobile emissions rules in this country. And it appears quite clear the future, well, like the song says, it's electric. We'll be back wherever you are, here up north. It means it's time for our weekly climate check with Melissa Baldoff, and we're going to be talking again about public input on some rules. The comment period is closed, and now we wait to see what the final product will be. And no matter what comes out of it, the future of road trips in America, it's electric. Melissa, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Very good, thanks. Nice to have you along, as always. You know, last week on our Hometown Health segment, we had Dr. Joel Charles on, and you're familiar with Dr. Charles and, you know, what a climate advocate he is. And we were talking about the ways that the Environmental Protection Agency takes up new rules in different categories every so often. And last week we focused on new rules regarding future, well, some existing and some future power plants. Now we're going to talk about new rules for vehicles, where, again, the public input period just closed, and now we wait and see what's going to happen. Can you tell us a bit about what are these rules? Why is the EPA thinking up new rules for the cars and trucks of the future?
Sure. Well, you know, one thing I would really encourage people to think about is that, you know, these aren't, you know, we shouldn't be thinking about these as just rules, because so many folks want to say like, oh, the EPA is, you know, they're trying to run everything, right? But these are really safeguards and protections that give us just high standards when it comes to the emissions that are coming out of vehicles. We know that pollution from cars and trucks contributes very, very heavily to pollution in general, to air pollution. And, you know, folks in rural communities are often hit first and hardest with some of that. Some of that impact. So, you know, in areas like La Crosse, as an example, you know, they see a very significant impact from those emissions. And this is an opportunity to clean up the air, have things improve. And it's something that, quite frankly, you know, the manufacturing sector has actually been pretty pretty eager to be a part of. So, you know, we know that Wisconsin has a strong automotive manufacturing sector, and we have what it takes to be a part of that global supply chain. So that's an opportunity to not only clean up the air, but have more good paying jobs as we kind of scale up to think about electrifying vehicles. So that's really what this is all about, is setting these high standards for cars. And for manufacturers to transition more vehicles to EV and get them away from that reliance on fossil fuel.
I was going to say, in fact, the new standards, according to one news report here, are as such that the EPA estimates that up to 2 out of 3 new vehicles sold by the year 2032 would have to be electric in order for car makers to be in compliance, and that the EPA Administrator Michael Regan says the proposed standards would eliminate more than 7 billion tons of CO2, equivalent to 4 years worth of the entire U.S. transportation sector, which isn't just fewer emissions, it's good for health. It saves lives.
Exactly. This is definitely about public health first and foremost, by cleaning up the air. And, you know, it's something that we have seen President Biden be a leader on already, by setting strong standards in the previous iteration of this rulemaking process. But, you know, now it's time to improve those standards for the next time period so we can really pave the way for that transition to more zero emission vehicles. So that's why you've had folks, you know, out there really encouraging the EPA to enact the strongest standards that they possibly can and finalize the rule by the end of the year, which is really important. You know, just because the public comment period has closed doesn't mean that they aren't still listening and paying attention to what people are saying out here. And it's a really important opportunity to let folks know what's at stake. You know, this is one of those things where it can get really wonky and you think, well, what does this have to do with anything? But it's very important to have those safeguards in place to make sure that we are getting improving from a public health standpoint, because that's going to be what really makes the difference when we, you know, don't rely so heavily on vehicles that are burning fossil fuel and, you know, putting those really dangerous emissions into the environment.
And, you know, it's not just cars and trucks and SUVs, but also medium duty vehicles, delivery trucks, tractor trailers. And again, based on one report, the EPA says this could lead to half of all new buses and 25% of long haul tractor trailers being electric by 2032. And I want to come back to something you said about the automakers. They're not fighting this tooth and nail by any stretch. We're talking about the degree of the final rules, but they do understand the business side of it, the job creation, the sales, because they know the public's looking at this and saying, okay, I think I might be ready for this.
Exactly. You know, they want to be part of this solution because they know that this is a win-win. You know, this is something that is going to improve public health. And this is where the future is headed, that more people are going to be looking at zero emissions vehicles. And, you know, by having these strong standards, it's also a way to help keep those costs down for families who are looking to invest in an electric vehicle. Having those strong standards helps make them more affordable for people to purchase and, you know, have at home. So it's really a win-win to have those high standards when it comes to, you know, the production of these vehicles in the future.
And it really, again, coming back to things like the Biden administration's Inflation Reduction Act, you know, all you ever heard about for the longest time was, well, these rules will add, you know, hundreds of dollars to the cost of making a vehicle. They might add thousands of dollars to the price, but now you've got tax credits of up to, you know, north of $7,500 for some of these vehicles, depending on what you buy.
Exactly. Exactly. And just like, you know, every other opportunity, you know, the clean vehicles have really spurred innovation in the industry, and that's created new jobs. So yeah, you had the, you know, kind of the doom and gloom from naysayers, you know, these are going to be so expensive. And now we are seeing this shift that, you know, these vehicles are going to be affordable to produce, affordable to purchase. And we know that it's going to save people a lot of money at the gas pump, which is, I think, why you get some resistance from, you know, some of the, you know, corporations who don't want to see an end of our dependence and reliance on fossil fuel. So I do think there is some resistance in some areas of industry, but largely people are interested in paying less money at the pump, having reliable vehicles that are safe and that they know are going to be healthier for the environment. So, you know, it's really something that, you know, this is a future that's coming. You know, we are seeing that in, you know, the building out of the EV infrastructure. That's something we're seeing throughout around the country. We're seeing it in Wisconsin. It's important. And it's important in communities that rely heavily on tourism, as, you know, something else to think about, that we want to make sure that Wisconsin is a leader in this sector and has the ability to, you know, stay competitive. We don't want to be falling behind our neighbors in Minnesota and Michigan and Illinois who are making those big investments. And I give a lot of credit to Governor Evers and the administration for really taking a very thoughtful approach to expanding the EV infrastructure, that charging infrastructure in the state. And, you know, talking to community leaders, talking to elected officials in cities and counties and villages and towns around the state to make sure that Wisconsin can, you know, is going to be a part of the future and, you know, the success in the future.
And let's talk for a second about the those external factors, because no matter what the EPA does and what car manufacturers do, if you have these outside influences like governors embracing this and wanting to set up a network of EV stations, that moves it in one direction. There's always things that can move it in another direction. We've talked about the problem of getting, you know, certain minerals that'll be needed for manufacturing batteries. There's a war going on in Ukraine. And then there's also the external factor of legal challenges. And we are no strangers here to what the EPA is facing in terms of a backlash from Republicans who are trying to go to court to, you know, I don't even know how quite to put it, that an executive branch agency can't make rules without, you know, going to Congress to dot every I and cross every T. But it's something that, you know, we've seen in this U.S. Supreme Court, and it's something we will have to continue to monitor.
Right. And isn't it something that that's exactly the process that Wisconsin Republicans have wanted here? You know, that was something that when they had the opportunity in a lame duck session prior to Governor Evers taking office, they wanted to diminish his ability for the governor and for state agencies that, you know, have leadership appointed by the governor to be able to make these decisions. And they want to insert themselves in the process, which unfortunately leads to worse outcomes. So I think we've seen that in the Republican playbook pretty consistently, that they want to muck up every process they can, you know, under the guise of, well, you know, we want to be a part of this and we want to be consulted, when really what they want to do is halt the progress. They would rather, you know, tie the hands of leaders like President Biden and Governor Evers and keep them from making progress and doing the right thing, then have to acknowledge that, you know, they're doing the right thing. So it's really frustrating to see that Republicans nationally and here in Wisconsin are trying to stand in the way of progress and of doing the right thing.
And by the way, I know we're wandering a little bit off topic here, but it's worth reminding people of, you know, who's in office, who you vote for, and their point of view on what these agencies are supposed to do. The New York Times had an article this week about how former President Trump has said if he gets reelected, he wants to rein in the power of independent agencies like the Federal Trade Commission, the Federal Communications Commission, put more things under direct presidential control, strip employment protections from tens of thousands of civil servants. Again, do we want agencies that are doing things in the public good and using science, or are they simply supposed to be, you know, an extension of the politics of the moment? And I think, Melissa, we have a pretty good idea of which would be better in the long run, not just for the economy, not just for the environment, but for democracy.
Absolutely. You know, we have so many, you know, it's wonderful to see how many people are committed to public service. And that is something that has always been so important to me as I've worked in, you know, state and local government, and seeing how many fantastic employees we have who really care about doing the right thing, that they are not there for politics. They don't know or care who's got an R or a D behind their name. I mean, I'm sure they know, but they, you know, that's not what the job is for them. And it's really insulting to the professional staff who work in these agencies, who are experts in their field, that you have politicians who want to micromanage them. Of course, you always want those checks and balances, but I know that here in Wisconsin, we have incredibly talented experts who work in our state agencies, and they go to work every day to do the right thing for our communities. They are not going there to prove political points. And I know it's the same case when it comes to our federal employees as well. So, you know, they should be able to do their jobs, and we should have trust in them.
And so we'll be looking to see what those folks do in terms of these new rules as they relate to emissions. But in the meantime, we also got to talk a little raw politics, which I don't get to do nearly enough with somebody else who, like me, worked in the state Capitol building for a time. And I appreciate you letting me take you on a detour like that, Melissa. Thank you so much. And we'll talk again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Well, I appreciate that from Melissa, but I was so looking forward to talking to her and filling you in on what had happened with Ron Johnson and Donald Trump that I kind of lost sight of my notes here and forgot to tell you the Brewers played last night. So real quick update there. Phillies starter Aaron Nola struck out 6 Brewers. He pitched into the 8th inning last night and was perfect in setting down the Brewers' first 14 batters as the defending National League champion Phillies beat the Brewers 4-3 to win their 4th straight game. That also broke the Brewers' 4-game win streak. Andrew Monasterio had 2 hits for the Brewers and drove in a run for Milwaukee, who continues to lead the Central Division. Colin Ray will get the start this evening. We will have tickets to give away to Saturday evening's game at American Family Field against the Atlanta Braves. We will do that tomorrow, so stick around for that. Coming up next, Melissa Kay from Locally Grown Radio joins us for our history lesson and music break next. You're up north.
Breeze. This summer, Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX has a new starting lineup. 4-6, The Devil's Advocates with Tom and Cruz. Then at 6, The Maggie Dawn Show on Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX.
This, of course, would be Paul McCartney and Wings. And their song, Listen to What the Man Said, hit number one on this day in 1975. Joining us now is Melissa Kay from Locally Grown Radio, WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids. Melissa, good morning.
Good morning.
How are we doing?
Great.
Okay.
The sun is shining.
Well, not here. The rain's coming in. It'll be here any time now. But it started off nice, and I'm sure it's beautiful elsewhere. So, I mean, now look at, we're talking about Aaron's got this shiny new studio, but everything, like a lot of things, when it's new, it's kind of sparse. And look how homey things are behind you there with the bookcases and the photos, and that appears to be some ivy off the Wrigley Field fence or something that's growing behind you. I don't know.
I like plants. I like books. Those are all my scripts up there.
All your scripts?
I inherited those from my grandma.
Wait. What do you mean? What kind of scripts are we talking here?
Yeah, they're theater scripts.
Okay.
Yeah, I inherited those from my grandma. Take up like this much of one shelf of I've been in.
So your grandma was in a lot of shows?
Yes, but this was also her collection of shows her and her compatriot Esther wanted to do, and they passed them on to me.
Oh, that was nice. Okay. Yeah. So when do you start your own little dinner theater there?
You know, it might be sooner than later. We'll see.
Okay. Let's see. This day in history, fire appears to be our theme. It was on this day in AD 64 that the Great Fire of Rome caused widespread devastation and raged on for 6 days, destroying half the city. And on this day in 1845 was the Great New York City Fire, causing at least 30 deaths and destroying 345 buildings. The number one song this day in 1980 was from Billy Joel. Has a longer intro than I was planning. What's the matter with there he goes. Clothes I'm wearing? Can't you tell that your tie's too wide? Maybe I should buy some old tab collars. Welcome back to the age of jive. So I was in high school when this came out. I think it was from Glass Houses. I just know it's one of those things. When you're at a certain age on school buses, you can sometimes, like, everybody kind of, it's almost like a musical, the way people break out in song. Somebody was playing this on a little transistor radio or whatever. Next thing you know, the whole bus is singing. It's still rock and roll to me. Or maybe awesome. I dreamed it. I dreamed an episode of Glee that I was in or something. I don't know. But Billy Joel was everywhere at that point, you know. And so was his hair, but I digress. On this day in 1966, a media sensation as Frank Sinatra, who was 50 years old at the time, got married to Mia Farrow, who was 20 years old at the time. They married in New York, and the marriage lasted just 2 years, which would have been, what, 10% of Mia Farrow's life right there, and a lot less than that of Frank Sinatra's. But how many marriages did Sinatra have overall?
But Mia got out in a good amount of time, I'd say.
Yeah, exactly. Looks to be 4. There was Barbara, there was Mia Farrow, there was Ava Gardner, and there was Nancy Barbato. And I'm sorry, I can't say Ava Gardner without thinking about the old Saturday Night Live skit with who was playing Sinatra at the time? Phil Hartman. and doing a great Sinatra. But I can't repeat what he said about Ava Gardner. So you're just going to have to look that one up yourself. All right. Let's see. The number one song on this day in 1986 was the only number one song from Genesis. I'm letting this play because I'm having a tough time believing that was their only number one song, and I had to look it up. And Melissa, plenty of songs did get into the top 10. You know, there was Abacab and Follow You, Follow Me. There was Mama. There was I Can't Dance. And there was Invisible Touch. But yeah
only pretty one iconic 80s sound, yeah.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Again, much like Billy Joel, you can't think of the 80s without thinking of Phil Collins. So there you go. Let's see. On this day in 1995, Clueless debuted in theaters, revived the teen movie genre, and boosted the career of Alicia Silverstone. Not on my list. Can't say I've ever seen it. Melissa, I'm counting on you to tell me all about Clueless.
I think I saw it, but I wasn't like the hugest fan.
Okay.
Not the kind of girls I like to hang out with.
No. And honestly, I would have conflated it with Mean Girls. Again, and I don't mean to be, borderline sexist about it. It's just I did not go see either one of those, Mean Girls or Clueless. And I'm sure one was a little bit more positive than the other, but I could be completely wrong here.
Shallow, rich girls. Okay.
Yeah, something like that. I know the one meme. What was that, Aaron?
As if.
Yes.
Yeah, that's from Clueless.
Okay. And it must have been, yes, I think it was Mean Girls, the one line I know from there, because you see it in memes all the time, is, get in, loser, as the car goes past.
Yes.
The limit does not exist.
There.
That's another one from Mean Girls that I've seen a fair amount.
Yes. Well, that was Lindsay Lohan.
Yes.
There. I knew I'd come up with it eventually here.
Way to go, Pat.
Yeah, I know. Boy, I am not impressed at all by that. One more tune. Lou Bega and his debut album came out this day in 1999, and everybody remembers doing a little mambo from the big single off of that one.
One, two, three, four, five. Everybody in the car, so come on, let's ride to the liquor.
I actually could just play this for the last 2 minutes of the segment. I think a lot of folks would be very happy with that. Nice little get you going song. It's one of the things I enjoy about this segment so much is that you don't know what's going to come up in the history books. And so, come on, there are days we've played like the Tommy Dorsey Orchestra, from the 1940s. And sometimes you get
Vivaldi
number five. Yeah, we get it all here. Yes.
So, that's what makes you awesome, Pat and Aaron.
Just Roger is commenting on Facebook on one of his favorite lines from the Saturday Night Live skit. And again, I'm not going to say it on the radio. So that's one with a live video.
It's very
feed.
Good, though.
Yes, it does. Good.
To go, Roger.
Yep. Thank you, Roger. All right. What is happening over at Locally Grown Radio that folks in the Wisconsin Rapids area should know about?
We have an exciting event coming up. It's going to be at Hoozles at the Lake next Thursday. And we're still formulating, but I think we're going to broadcast live and do a live remote from Hoozles Rise to Music. We've got local musicians competing for the second annual Hoozles Rise to Music, and they will be named, we'll name a champion that night. The audience gets to vote, and then there's a bunch that they win from that. They get studio time, they get a Hoozles at the Lakes year residency, along with other perks.
Very nice. When's it again?
Yeah, next Thursday, the 27th.
All right, well, look for that. Melissa, thank you so much. Have a great day.
Yeah, you too.
All right. Coming up next, we're going to be talking about the difference between Michigan and Iowa in their legislative sessions with a couple of reporters from those states next. You're up north.